Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st of November, Anno Domini 2009, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, nothing to lose.
And that, too.
Across the inner tubes. The inter tubes. All right, we're going to start with iPhone owners. They're charging Apple and AT&T with breaking antitrust laws. They've asked a federal judge this week to force Apple to hand over the iPhone source code. The lawsuit, which was actually filed in October of 2007, accuses Apple and AT&T of violating antitrust laws, including the Sherman Act. Wait, they transported a 17-year-old across state lines? Oh, I'm sorry, that's the Mann Act. By agreeing to a multi-year deal that
so
locks...
So easy you are confused.
agreed to a multi-year deal that locks U.S. iPhone owners into using the mobile carrier. What?
I said, what does iPhone have to do with tanks?
On Wednesday, the plaintiffs asked the U.S. District Court Judge James Ware to compel Apple to produce the source code for the iPhone 1.1.1 software, an update that Apple issued in September 2007. The update crippled iPhones that had been unlocked or jailed. Hey, guess what? You turn up the sound here and you can hear yourself better. Okay.
Modern technology.
Yep. The update crippled iPhones that had been unlocked or jailbroken so that they could be used with mobile providers other than AT&T. The iPhone 1.1.1 update bricked those first generation iPhones that had been hacked, rendering them useless and wiping all the personal data off of the device. Several days before the iPhone 1.1.1 was released, Apple threatened to take action against users who'd hacked into their handsets, saying that doing so would violate, and I quote, violate their iPhone software license agreement and void their warranty. Prior to that, Apple CEO Steve Jobs said it was his company's job to stymie attempts to jailbreak the iPhone. It's a cat and mouse game, Jobs said. People will try to break in, and it's our job to stop them from breaking in. The plaintiffs in the case want to examine some of the iPhone source code, including that for the kernel, the Core OS, and Core Services Layer, as well as for two programs, Purple Restore and BB Updater, which are used to update the iPhone's operating system and flash the phone's baseband chip. The source code is necessary, they argued, in order to determine whether all iPhones were given the same 1.1.1 update and whether it was designed to brick all or just some hacked iPhones. Unless plaintiffs are given access to version 1.1.1 source code, their ability to prove the size and scope of the class affected by the version 1.1.1 update will be severely compromised and unfairly prejudiced, the motion read. The plaintiffs face a deadline of January 8th for filing a motion to grant the case action, class action loss status. If Ware certifies the class, other iPhone users would be able to join the case. So the question for you on our website at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. There you go. The poll of the week is, should Apple be forced to hand over the iPhone's source code? And the choices are, of course, we deserve to know why they're limiting our devices. No way. Apple has every right to their proprietary secrets. Who cares? I love my droid. And who cares? I love my rotary dial candlestick phone, of which I actually have one. And once you are done with voting in the poll, 44 of you have already done that. Once you're done voting in the poll, I know that that's really not enough for you, particularly on an issue like this. So you can head over, if you look at the little yellow box underneath the poll, you can click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And you'll be able to enter
Need
your
more
opinion.
Sounds.
Yes, you do, as five people have already done. And once you're done with that, you'll still have more to say. I know you will. So give us a call. Tell us how you feel about all of this. Give us a call. Our number is in the 585 area code. It's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. For those of you who are listening to us, you can do so here at Jazz 90.1 FM. You can do so online at jazz901.org. Dave is desperately trying to get the stream to over 100.
Yeah, I keep shooting for it. We're getting darn close. I mean, I think we've been up to, like, I think 87. 87 nice. At one time. So I know, you know, as more and more folks, and that's why we keep telling folks each week, tell a friend. We have moved. We're now back on the air. Don't wait for us to come back on other channels. We are here at Jazz 90.1. Spread the word. Get it out there that we're now here. We're going to be here every Saturday from 12 to 2. No sports interruptions, nothing. Right. And you're going to get close to a full 2 hours, like we've been telling folks. We have very few commercials. I'm lucky the breaks that Rob has put in is enough time to grab a sip of coffee and blow my nose.
If you're quick.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking
of... Well, let's go back to the news story. When does a company's trade secrets become, you know, fodder for government policy?
Right. And that's a lovely question. Yeah. And the real question is, I think people just want to use iPhones on non-AT&T networks, but doing so, of course, jailbreaking your phone voids the warranty.
Which every iPhone has been jailbroken. Well, you need to jailbreak it to unlock it. And one of the ironies here in America, at least, is the only alternative to AT&T for the iPhone is T-Mobile, which doesn't have that big of a network either.
Right. I don't know what good it's going to do. But it does void your warranty. And speaking of voiding your warranty...
Well, you can always reflash your firmware, and then they won't know.
Right. Did you hear the other thing about that voids the Apple warranty?
Smoking.
Smoking near your computer voids your warranty.
Well, yeah. Warranties are for merchant manufacturing defects, and virtually every warranty has what they call the abuse clause. If you accidentally abuse your device, that's not going to be covered under the warranty. And apparently there were two cases where the people smoked so much, the innards of the computer were just so caked with tar and nicotine.
Oh, and you guys have seen that. I've seen it.
It's terrible, yeah.
It's horrible.
That Apple wouldn't cover the repair, and apparently they appealed all the way up to Steve Jobs, and they said, sorry. And there is a clause in the warranty that talks about abuse, neglect, misuse. You run it in too hot or too cold a condition, and this isn't just computers; it's pretty much any device. You know, if you smash your phone against the wall, the warranty is not going to pay to fix it.
Right. If you were to leave your computer in the back seat of your car on a really hot day, and the case melted,
actually, cold is worse.
Well, and cold is worse, right?
Yeah.
I once left a floppy disk on the back deck of my car. Two things that almost nobody has anymore.
Yeah.
And. And I took it out one day, brought it into the house, and I was moving it around, and all of a sudden all this dust was falling out of it. The rust had literally lifted off the substrate and was falling.
We used to have trouble in college walking from your dorm to the computer lab in a Rochester winter. You had to wait half an hour or so to let your floppies warm back up.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Boy, I know. Oh, yeah. Right. I know all about
and your discs, too.
The big thing really is that computers are not designed to be used in human environments. They have a much narrower range than humans do for where they're good, where they work.
Yep.
So
there's range.
The same is true of phones, however.
It's very fine print at the bottom of the manuals or warranties. You know, operating environment, the temperature, humidity, altitude.
Yep.
Yep.
And the same thing is actually true of phones. Phones are really not designed to be left outdoors. You keep them next to your body when you're outdoors.
That was actually a big mess with the iPhone. With the docking connector at the bottom of the iPhone tends to be in the palm of your hand while you're holding it. And there have been several cases of people working out in gyms where they get sweaty and water gets into that docking connector, which then voids the warranty.
Yep.
They were doing another report also on the radiation effects of cell phones.
Yep. Oh, yeah. They do those all the time.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, rearing its head again because, it's, you know, Christmas time again, and, you know, that's the big thing, you know, getting a new BlackBerry or whatever, because the ads, I love the one about the Island of Misfit Toys.
Yeah, right. Right.
Oh, he was bad.
Yeah. And so, as an example, here's the... operating requirements for the iMac. Operating temperature is 50 to 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Storage temperature, -4 to 116 Fahrenheit. Humidity, 5% to 95%, non-condensing, which is the key.
Right.
And the maximum altitude is 10,000 feet. So you can't use your airplane. Yeah, you can't use your computer in an unpressurized airplane.
Nor, frankly, would you be able to.
Yeah. Oh, the oxygen mask just dropped down. Let me get my computer out.
Yeah. Hey, I had a friend of mine, Lukey, had an interesting question. And that's why I figured I'd bring
all
this
right.
one up. He was wondering, can the bandwidth be shared equally for users in a house? And what he means by this is if he has a main computer feeds feeds from the income broadband, it reaches before it reaches the wireless, i.e. one network cable to the computer, one to the wireless. Not from the incoming broadband strength to the wireless and the computer plugged into the wireless.
Generally, each device uses as much as it can.
Yeah, and there's no way in the actual device to sit there and parse it equally.
Right. And
well, yes, you can, actually. If you have the right kind of router, you yeah. can shape the bandwidth, but it's an expensive router. It's,
which,
I don't
yeah.
think
ordinarily
the
a bad
average,
thing
yeah.
that the cable companies are using.
Right. Yeah. But if you have the right kind of router, you can say this port, right?
Yeah, like I know about those.
Right,
yeah,
gets precedence, or this port gets 70% of the signal, or you know, of the use,
like
or whatever.
In businesses, they can do that.
Right, and you
and
can get
that.
Those kind yeah. of routers, but
big
they're
bucks.
Not cheap.
Uh-uh.
But you can do it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, I was talking strictly for home
yeah.
use.
Now,
and the and
I haven't seen a router that does that.
Me neither. That's
at a price that
that's
the average person is willing to pay.
Because, like I say, I've seen one to where, matter of fact, this one company, they do a lot of drawings and all that.
Right.
So they're giving more bandwidth. They're actually literally
right.
controlling more bandwidth to the folks. They're four architects. They literally get a little bit more of the bandwidth because they are, you know, really pushing some big drawings.
Right.
Versus the folks that are just checking their email.
Yeah.
It's like, you
and
wait a few seconds for
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly right.
And on that side of the coin, it's very unlikely for two average people to be using the internet at the same time on a packet-by-packet basis. You know, you download a website,
yes, exactly.
and then while you're sitting there reading it, you're not using the internet anymore.
Right.
Only if two people were downloading something at mm-hmm. exactly the same time. Something
well,
big enough to be a single download.
Right, and the reality is that for general use, you can have about 100 people on the same line, and
mm-hmm.
they're not going to interfere with each other. But general yeah. use does not include downloading movies and playing huge video games and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And those will soak up bandwidth. It's an interesting problem. I mean, that's the you know there are two major broadband competitors here in town. One has a shared connection. In the neighborhood area, and the other has a connection that is dedicated up to the central office. And I was on the shared one for a long time and had problems because the people in my neighborhood during, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I owned it. It was great. But during the evening, whatever they were downloading, whatever, playing games, whatever, I don't know what it was, but my bandwidth was horrible. I mean, it was just horrible. And nothing changed. So I switched to the other one, and I'm very happy there. But it depends on what your router is capable of doing, Lukey. And unless you manage to get one of those routers, I don't think you
I can understand his point. My computer's hardwired. I want all the bandwidth, and all you wireless people can get what you take.
So, right.
Yeah.
Well, and of course you're all sharing anyway, right? I mean, that's the nature of wireless. You're all sharing the connection.
And that's one. And he's one of our listeners that, believe it or not, he listens to the podcast, so he'll be listening to this later. He is in England.
How are things in the future, Lukey?
And he literally loves taking it into work, and he plays it for a few other folks in the area. So they all listen to it, and they go, we love listening to your show. We can't wait for the next podcast to get it because of the time difference in the age.
He's in England?
Yes.
I need to talk to him. I'm going to send him a sling box so that I can get a lot of the British TV shows.
Ooh.
See, now that's Lukey. We need to talk, buddy. All right, we're going to go to the phones. And our first caller, and I hope you're all sitting down because this will come as a shock to you. It's Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Oh, you're funny. Okay, I've got two questions. Remember about 3-4 weeks ago I was telling you I was having trouble with Mozilla and that bar coming across saying I didn't type this right?
Right.
Okay. I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. So I uninstalled Mozilla and installed it again. I don't have that problem.
Yeah, you had some sort of extra bar. A lot of companies nowadays are making bars, menu bars that are added to Mozilla or to Firefox or to Internet Explorer or whatever. To add things, like you can get one from Google, you can get one, it's a toolbar, you can get one from Google, you can get one from Yahoo.
Yeah.
And there are companies that add other ones, and that's, in a sense, a virus.
Yeah.
But if you uninstall Firefox and really actually wipe it out, seriously wipe it out, then you get rid of that and reinstalling it again. Of course, now you've lost your bookmarks, but reinstalling it again... would then give you, you know, you wouldn't have that problem.
Okay, yeah, I've got another question for you. This is not for me because I can't afford it, but a friend of mine wants to buy a computer, but you say buying locally, and she was going to come to Dave, which I recommended, but she said, I'm not too computer savvy. I want to buy like a gateway because I can get all my downloads and my drivers and everything from Gateway instead of having to go to each individual manufacturer. Okay.
Yep, and that's actually true. And I understand that. One of the things that the nationals have over us really is that they can, you know, you put in your, like with Dell, you can put in your serial number, and it'll tell you what drivers you need. Yeah, I understand that. But Linda, we gotta go. We gotta take a quick break. We'll be back in just. Do I have?
Okay.
Am I done? Or we got another 30 seconds? All right. We're gonna be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You're listening to Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is Station Manager Rob Linton thanking you for becoming a member or renewing your membership to Jazz 90.1. Because of you, we'll continue to broadcast great jazz music you've come to expect, as well as continuing our online streaming, live studio concerts, and special programs you can't hear anywhere else. If you've not yet made that pledge of support to Jazz 90.1, you still have time. You can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. or by calling 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. You can browse and select from the great thank you gifts we're offering at the various donation levels like CDs and DVDs and great Jazz 90.1 clothing items online. Thank you for supporting your jazz station. Member supported, Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Sound Bites.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Hi, I'm Linda Wildman. Please join me middays, 10 to noon on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve. I'm Steve Ray.
He's Steve
and
Ray.
I can't talk.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Hey, guess what? Spain. The rain in Spain stays mainly on the plain, and now they're all going to have broadband while they do it. Spanish officials said earlier this week that the government will require service providers to offer broadband with speeds of at least 1 megabit per second at regulated rates to residents living anywhere in the country. The Spanish telecommunications minister issued a statement Tuesday declaring that broadband would be added to the country's so-called universal service, which guarantees reasonably priced telephone service to citizens. The goal is to offer affordable broadband with speed of at least 1 megabit per second to residents by 2011. Now, you got to understand this is not free, right?
No, but
and they have to make it available. So, like here in America, where we have huge swaths of the country where you can only get dial up, they would have to be providing some sort of service. Now, 1 megabit doesn't sound like a lot, of course, but the same thing, by the way, is happening in Finland. They're doing the same sort of thing. And while 1 megabit doesn't sound like a lot, both Spanish and Finnish officials say it's just the beginning. They hope the speed will serve as a starting point, and they believe that network operators will increase speeds over time. That's not quite what's happening here, but the U.S. Federal Communications Commission is drafting a national broadband policy that outlines a plan for policies to help provide universal broadband to every American. The plan will be presented to Congress in February of 2010. In a report this week to the FCC, the task force working on the national broadband policy highlighted several barriers to universal broadband, including problems with the U.S. Universal Service Fund. But taking action to change the system is difficult. The Universal Service Fund is the thing that subsidizes the cost of building the telephone infrastructure throughout the country, particularly in places where it's too expensive to deploy such services commercially. Much of the money of this fund, which is collected from consumers as part of their monthly phone bills, is still being used to subsidize regular telephone service. So that's a bit of a problem. And while a lot of consumers believe the U.S. government should take a more active role, it's in directing policy kind of the way it's happening in Finland and Spain. It's important to remember that the United States is a much larger country, both by population and geography, than either of those countries. To put it in context, Finland has about 5.3 million residents, compared to more than 300 million who live in the United States. Here's the question for you. Do you feel we should have mandated minimum internet access rates? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ, 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, just like Bodan did. Bodan, where are you calling from?
Rochester, New York.
Ah, yes, Rochester. What's your question?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. This question is related to your security tango. I know that you've changed the... one of the programs there going from Adaware to Super Anti-Spyware.
Right.
Yesterday, the Super Anti-Spyware program took a large upgrade, at least for my machine, downloaded a bunch of updates. And this morning, because I do turn off the machine at night, this morning when I started up my computer, I noticed something that I've never seen before in regards to Super Anti-Spyware. It planted its little ladybug on my toolbar, on the taskbar next to the clock and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I double-checked it. I went into MSConfig, and sure enough, it's now one of the programs that wants to start when my computer starts.
Right. Normally what you do is if you right-click on or just start up Super Anti-Spyware,
yeah,
and in the preferences,
uh-huh,
over it's on the lower right-hand button, click on that,
yep,
and in there there's it's in the upper right-hand corner a checkbox. Uncheck it that says start this program on startup.
Is there an advantage or disadvantage on having this program start up on startup?
I usually just turn it off. I mean, let folks run it when they want.
It tries to watch and prevent spyware from getting in the first place, but it takes clock cycles and can slow your machine down.
If you've got a fast enough machine, 3 gigahertz, whatever, you're not going to notice that it's running in the background, and you've got enough RAM. But if you've got a slower machine, let's say you've got a netbook or an older machine, then you will notice it. And then it's up to you whether or not you feel secure without it running constantly in the background.
So there is an advantage of it running at startup.
Yes, absolutely, because then it's checking your machine all the time.
Ah, okay. So at the present time, I went into MSConfig and I disabled it at startup. Is that another option?
Well, yeah, that's another option, but it's a lot easier to just tell it don't start.
Yeah. And Dave, how did you? I'm missing the point. I do have the little ladybug down on my I think it's called the taskbar.
Right.
And I right click, but I don't see options.
No. If you go in, you got to actually start up the program.
Start up the program. Okay.
Yes. From start the start button program.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Preferences.
Yeah.
And where will it be? Check for updates before scanning, blah, blah, blah.
There's a, up in the upper left-hand corner, there is a, or, you know, there's some verbiage.
I just did it, general and startup.
Yeah. And there's a, like I say, there's a button there. Top one is check that says start this program at startup.
Yeah, I do see it, yeah. And actually, it's unchecked right now, so maybe that occurred when I unchecked MSConfig and then restarted my machine.
Could be.
But you gentlemen actually say there is an advantage of having this program start up when your computer starts.
Well, it depends on two things. First, if you've got a fast enough machine that you're not going to notice it taking the clock cycles, and it doesn't really take that many usually.
Okay.
But secondly, how safe do you feel on the Internet without having something automatically checking in the background? And third, do you have anything else that's also automatically checking in the background?
Not at the present time. The only other program I had was removed, and that was LavaSoft AdAware. And one of the features of that was there was something that was called, I think, something was running all the
on
time.
Demand, on-demand checking. And I would suggest that, you know, if it's up to me, if you've got enough cycles, leave it on. You're that much safer.
Okay. That's what I wanted to find out.
There you go.
Gentlemen, thank you.
No, thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's always a big question, of course. You know, do you...
That's right up there with, do I leave my computer on all the time or turn it off?
And the answer to that is...
Depends.
Yes. Yes, you do leave it on all the time or turn it off. I'm not sure there's a third choice. All right, we're going to go to the mailbag. Sleep.
Well, sleep is the
yeah,
third choice.
True. That is the third choice. Sleep and hibernate is the fourth choice. Are you happy now? All right, Mr. Pedantic. All right, here's we're going to go to the mailbag. We also take questions at our website. By the way, you know, we're also on an IRC chat. We're at FNET, EFNET. And as Octothorpe Soundbites, or as most people prefer, pound soundbites or hash soundbites. That's all one word with a Y, Frances would like us to remind you, as she runs the IRC chat for us. But Al from Rochester writes, one of my computers is 6 years old, have 512 megs of DDR memory and a 20 gigabyte hard drive. Almost every time it is turned on, we get the following message. You are running very low on local drive C. To free space on this drive by deleting old or unnecessary files, please click here.
I love machines like that that tell you what to do in the error message.
Exactly. I have run disk cleanup on almost each occasion, deleting all temporary files. I have also deleted every file from my documents and my pictures, deleted all files from the recycle bin. Several operating system files have also been deleted or removed. Still, the message keeps coming up, sometimes showing only 4 megabytes of space. I've just run the Security Tango 3 times, which turned up only 2 registry problems, which were quarantined. The following operating systems are active: Google Update 2.56 gigabytes, HP Printer 0.57 megabytes, Intel Extensions graphic driver, blah, 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 all this other stuff. Any ideas to what is eating up all the disk space? The primary user of this machine is my wife, who basically only uses it for email and searching the net. The only downloads are occasional photos received as email attachments. Any help you can offer is great.
Yes, there's a program called ATF Cleaner. It's a freebie.
We also talked about one earlier this year called Disktective that will scan your hard drive and show you where all your files space is being used.
ATF, what that will do is it'll not only check whether you use an IE, it will also check if you're using Firefox. Notice I didn't say Foxfire. Yeah.
Yes, you did.
I still love that movie. Anyways,
movie is Firefox with Clint Eastwood, based on the 1977 book of the same name by Craig Thomas.
Right.
Where he steals the airplane. It's the Firefox is the code.
Foxfire is the thing that they sometimes shout in movies before they release a rocket from a Firefox class jet or something.
Supposed to be Fox 1, Fox 2, depending on which weapon you're firing.
But anyways, it will check, you know, most programs, and it'll look for temporary internet files, caches, and with, you know, just clicking a few buttons, you can have it clean out the temp files and everything else. And the cool thing about this, though, it will do it for all the identities. Whereas a lot of
that's annoying, yeah.
Yeah, most of the time, you know, you got to do it one.
But 20 gigs isn't that much hard drive space. With the operating system, any software you have installed, you just may be out of space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the simple reality is that 20 gig is not a big drive anymore. And clearly something is in there, you've danced the tango. So the only thing I can suggest is that you've missed a folder somewhere in which all the files that you've been... For example, if you've got a bunch of photos in one of those photo programs, those photo album programs...
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a bunch of toolbars, if you've got a, you know, could be any one of a million things. It could be that you cleaned out a bunch of malware that had loaded some junk on your machine, but those hidden folders are still there with those things in them.
Well, like I was telling you last night, that one client of mine, you know, we fed them up with a 1 terabyte drive, and they're already complaining it's full.
Yeah.
1 terabyte is a thousand gigabytes.
Yeah, but here's the story. Before that, they only had a 40 gig hard drive.
Right.
And that was still only maybe 2/3 full.
Right.
So I'm figuring a terabyte.
Yeah.
Once they realized they had all this space, okay, now all the record collection, because they discovered iTunes, is now on there.
Right.
They started downloading, some movies, because now they have the space.
Right.
And within a couple of weeks, it's like, I don't have enough room.
Right. A lot of people do that. It happens to a bunch of people. But in this case, he said his wife, you know, didn't have a bunch of stuff. But I think you need to check more carefully. The other thing you can do is put in a bigger hard drive.
Mm-hmm. Or just, you know, and if you don't want to go in the machine, the USB drives are great.
Right. Throw a
terabyte or a
terabyte. And they're not that expensive.
And half, yeah.
Store your files and downloads and videos on that external drive.
Right. Yeah,
back them up to that. I mean, like you say, they're getting so cheap, it's an easy way to do backup nowadays.
And having something, if you've got a router in your home, consider getting one of those that sits right on the network itself.
Like a Buffalo drive.
Right.
Like that
way everybody can use it, and it becomes backup storage kind of for everybody. You can write batch files that back up your documents directory to it every night or whatever.
Well, I've done that for some companies. I've put out a Buffalo drive so they can store their drawings to there or, you know, whatever, documents and photos and everything else. And then I have two other just regular USB hard drives, and they rotate between those two because we got it set up that now the folks will copy all with little routines. They just click on it at night, and it'll go ahead and fire off and stop copying everything to their folder on the Buffalo drive.
Right.
Then at midnight, the Buffalo drive now copies everything over to this USB hard drive, and they rotate them. One goes home. He brings in the next one. And this constant rotation, and it's working out great for them.
They've got
it protected just in case something happens, because when you think it's not, that's when it will.
Yep. We're really kind of past the point where you can store all your stuff in one place and be happy. A lot of people, we've talked about this before, think they have two hard drives in their machine, but it's really just a partition on the other hard drive. Even so, even if you have two hard drives in your machine, think about it. If something happens to the machine itself, you've lost both hard drives.
If it gets a good power surge, yeah.
Even with external hard drives, that can happen if you leave it connected and plugged in all the time. We had a customer this week, brought his computer in, his internal hard drive. Something corrupted the OS and it won't boot. The external hard drive won't mount either. So whatever did it to both drives.
Right. Being able to put it up on the internet, and there are a bunch of companies that make that offer, you know, 2 gig of free space or 4 gig of free space or whatever that is.
Most
you
of your ISPs, both Roadrunner and DSL. Everybody that has an account there gets some space.
Right. Well, and you know, some of them are awful cheap. Somebody was offering like 8 gig or 10 gig for a couple of bucks a month. I forget what it was. Somebody was saying, well, that's an awful lot of money. And I said, well, but you're talking about your grandkids' photos and stuff like that. That's not worth $2 a month.
Or how
to you?
About
how
personal
cheap do you have to be?
Or personal financial information.
Well, I don't know. That's a tougher one. I'd want to encrypt that before. I would put it up there, but I would want to encrypt it first.
Definitely. And QuickBooks and all that give you the capabilities of doing that.
Exactly. And you can buy some online storage. Some is free. You can buy some more, and then you keep all your data up in the cloud. And what's nice about that is if your computer is killed, you go out and get a new computer, and you're back up and running. That's the deal behind some of those new cloud computing initiatives. We can actually talk about a little bit about that. The Chrome OS. Google, in fact, on Thursday released its Chrome operating system to the open source community. Said it designed the netbook OS to be faster, simpler, and more secure than existing ones. However, Google made it clear that Chrome will not be able to replicate everything that other operating systems do. For example, Chrome OS will only run web-hosted applications, and its peripherals will have to comply with specific hardware reference designs. This means it will not be able to run applications built for Google's own Android mobile operating system. As such, when the first Chrome OS netbook hits the markets at the end of 2010, Google expects them to be companion devices whose owners will also have conventional PCs in their houses. There are applications today that aren't available on the web. We're really focused on the use case for this device that most people who would buy this device next year. We expect them to have another machine with a conventional operating system at home. The goal of this device is for it to be a delightful experience for you to be on the internet. That's the scenario we're focusing on. There will be some things it will not do. If you're a lawyer and are planning to spend your entire day editing contracts back and forth, this isn't the right machine for you. As such, it seems the Linux-based Chrome OS will also require the end users to be very comfortable with cloud computing and its basic idea of keeping applications and their data stored in a vendor data center. You can do that now, of course. You can do that now, of course, with Google Docs, where all your documents go up on the web and things like that. And, you know, you won't be able to run Photoshop or Excel or whatever, you know, those things. You'll have equivalents. So it's pretty interesting. So our question to you, are you comfortable with the cloud? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. Or, of course, if you're outside the 585 area code, it's 1-800-790-0415. And let us know what you think. A lot of people are getting into Google Docs. I use it for certain things. You can share documents with other people across the net. It's really kind of useful. But is it for everybody? I don't know. But you'll tell us. Give us a call. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is Station Manager Rob Linton thanking you for becoming a member or renewing your membership to Jazz 90.1. Because of you, we'll continue to broadcast great jazz music you've come to expect, as well as continuing our online streaming, live studio concerts, and special programs you can't hear anywhere else. If you've not yet made that pledge of support to Jazz 90.1, you still have time. You can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. or by calling 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. You can browse and select from the great thank you gifts we're offering at the various donation levels like CDs and DVDs and great Jazz 90.1 clothing items online. Thank you for supporting your jazz station. Member supported, Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master?
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the karate glove. And I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-ya!
Chop wood, concrete, trees. It can even chop through these 8 guitars.
Hi-ya! Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, those of you who are listening in, you really should think about the fact that that commercial break we just had, you could be there. Call the station. Get your company in. Be an underwriter for Soundbites. Easy enough to do. Was that subtle enough?
I think so. Very apropos. Thank you very much. Smooth, slid into that. You know, good segue.
That's exactly right. And I've been looking at the podcast. Hundreds and hundreds of people download our podcast. This week we had people in Australia and Switzerland. Germany, Canada.
And we're at 87 on the stream. Come on, keep going. 190 this week.
That's right. Dave is, we have a 100 user limit on the stream. And honestly, for the longest time, that's been comfortably enough for this station. We want to break it. We want to break it hard and make the station have to buy more space. But yeah, when we left, we were talking about the cloud and Google Docs and all of that stuff. I'm not terribly comfortable with the thought that my personal data could be up in the cloud for anybody to look at, but certainly for the kind of documents that I write, for example, when I go out and give a presentation, if I put that presentation up in the cloud, that doesn't bother me in the least because it's a public thing that I'm doing anyway. And over in the IRC chat, they were talking about the idiocy of the phrase "the cloud," but it's you know, they call it the cloud computing.
And there have been outages in recent weeks, so it's it's great as long as it works.
Well,
but if
right.
your internet is down, you're out of luck. If they happen to be down for your area, you're out of luck.
Right. It is precipitated on the premise that you will always have internet access. And if that access is down for any reason, you can't get there. But now with your iPhone or your Droid or your other smartphone.
Yeah, you got cell connections in addition to
right.
Wi-Fi and Ethernet.
Right.
And then there's the cellular hotspots, the MiFi devices that are pretty cool. Uses your cell phone to create a Wi-Fi hotspot so you can use it on your laptop and your cell phone. That's one. I've heard of several people on the internet using a MiFi so they can use their iPhone on Verizon.
Yep.
Because Verizon sells the MiFi, so you get their network coverage and connect your iPhone
nice.
Via Wi-Fi instead of Edge.
That's not a bad idea. Buy a MiFi and suddenly you're...
It's an extra $60 a month for the MiFi.
Well, yes, it is. Yes, it is. But the point is, you now have that capability to hook any connection. Well, up to what, four?
Four or five, yeah.
Probably, I don't know how they limit. They limited the software, clearly.
Well, I don't know if there's a hard limit or they're saying that you're sharing a 1 or 2 megabit connection,
right, four or five.
And it's back to dial-up speeds.
Right. And so, five people, you're right. But I'll tell you what, I'm more and more fascinated by the computer in your pocket, the mm-hmm. smartphone. You know,
I still love my iTouch.
The iTouch is great, and that's the kind of thing he's talking about. With the iTouch, you don't have cellular service. But if you had that MiFi, that connects to the Verizon network mm-hmm. and then gives you a wireless connection to everybody else that you can go through that. So you could put that anywhere in your car, wherever you wanted it, right? And then that would be on the internet wherever you are.
Yeah.
So it's really a pretty clever idea.
There's a lot of places, though, that I go to, though, that just have free Wi-Fi.
Hotspots are
connected. That's why I refuse to go and get, like, a Droid or anything else like that right now. I spend enough time during the course of a day playing on computers.
Yep. Right. And there's several voice over IP applications available for the iPod Touch, iPhone, Skype, and several others. So you can still make phone calls, even though it's not a phone.
Right. That's exactly right. Okay, we don't like to see Dave that excited. That's just not one of those.
89.
It's just not one of those things that you really want to see. I'm sorry.
That's why I do it off camera.
Yeah, thank you. And I can't tell you how much America appreciates that.
Only here.
Only here. But yeah, so I'll tell you, if there are any Verizon people listening, I can't get my Droid yet, and I'm blaming each and every one of you individually and collectively. Dave's even more excited. We broke 90 people on the stream. That's probably like one guy in a lab putting it on every machine.
That's okay.
You don't care. Yeah, I know you don't care. But that's the deal. I think that as time goes on, we're going to see more and more of these devices. You can now buy a netbook from Verizon, essentially.
I saw that commercial last night. $99 for a netbook.
with a 2-year commitment.
And, yeah, a little tiny print, right. You know, 2-year commitment at, you know, 100 and whatever it is a month. So, right. so you're paying, you know, $2,500 for this netbook.
Right. But you get the netbook.
Yeah.
But I own a netbook. I did not pay $2,500 for it. Thank you very much. And there are times when I would love to be able to plug in a little thing and be able to get, a wireless connectivity thing for it.
Yep.
A cellular connectivity thing for it.
You can get USB dongles too.
Yeah, I know.
But the standalone MiFis are nice because they work with not only computers but other computing devices.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And if you get one of those and stick it in a room, even if there's no Wi-Fi there.
Yep, you have Wi-Fi.
You can get Wi-Fi. Dave, get off camera. If you're going to do the little happy dance, you have to be off camera.
Oh, darn.
So, yeah, that's the kind of thing you have to be... I think that's going to be the future. I really do. All right, we're going back to the mailbag. Goody from Houghton, New York.
Houghton.
Well, he or she told me how to pronounce Goody, didn't tell me how to pronounce Houghton.
I almost went to school in Houghton.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you overshoot or what? You almost went to school.
Well, that was the...
I didn't get off the bus, so
my dad. Well, no, it was funny. My dad wanted me to go to Purdue.
Uh-huh.
And my mom said Houghton or Roberts because she wanted me closer to home.
Oh, there you go. And so you ended up,
up at Roberts so I could go home for dinner every couple nights and laundry and all the other stuff at home. Yeah.
It's the good reason for being local. That's exactly right. Okay, so Goody from Houghton writes, I keep trying to download some free templates to go with my Creative Memories Storybook Creator Plus 3.0 upgrade program. This should be an easy download. However, I keep getting the message startup error buffer cannot be null. Parameter name buffer. I've tried everything from being sure my CA firewall is allowing creativememories.com stuff to come through. It is. I have gone into both Mozilla, my default browser, and IE to be sure they allow creativememories.com and the publisher of the software, Caspedia, to get through. They do. I was on the phone for over 1 hour before I got a CM, Computer Memories, Creative Memories rep to help me. Her conclusion was that the firewall was causing the problem, and I needed to talk to someone from Computer Associates. Fat chance of that, since it's part of Time Warner. There's no real person to talk to about Computer Associates. I think it's some kind of configuration problem. What do you think? The download, 183 meg, seems to take place, and then the error message pops up. I've tried this at least a dozen times after messing with the above-named issues. Grr. All right, Goody. My thought is it could be, if it is, in fact, the firewall, then the easiest way to tell if it's that is to turn it off.
And I've seen cases where it is the firewall because you've got web access open, but when you click the link to download, it actually does an FTP download.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
Your firewall could be blocking FTP. But then it would stop it before it downloaded. If it's downloading and then getting the error message, that sounds like something else.
Well, I had one also do zone alarm and turned up the security so tight.
That could be it too.
they were getting themselves getting out. Right. And I had
when it's trying to move it from the temp directory to your download location, that's where it's failing.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And it's possible that that's the problem. And again, the easiest way to tell is to turn it off and then turn it back on after you do your download. Hello. It could also be that you don't have enough space on your hard drive left. And it can download it, but then it's going to make a copy of it, and it doesn't have enough space to make the copy. Although 183 meg is not a lot is not much in the way of size. But I would try that first. I would try definitely turning off the firewall for just the time it takes you to go to Creative Memories and download the file and see if that's the problem. If not, I'm not entirely certain what to tell you, except perhaps you could download it at a friend's place, throw it on a thumb drive, and bring it home. But beyond that, I don't really know what to say.
Yeah.
Do other files download? Is it a generic problem with downloading, right, or is it just the specific thing?
Well, and that leads back to the problem you were saying. If I can download something via an HTTP connection but can't download it via an FTP connection, I might be able to go to one site but not another.
Right. I see that a lot in corporations where they block FTP by default because you shouldn't be FTPing. You shouldn't know how to FTP.
But yeah, some folks need to. Right? But
especially the people we work with are all graphic designers, and 100 meg, 200 meg files are so common that you need to FTP because they don't fit through the email.
Right. And that is an interesting problem. A lot of places have a limit to the size of what you can send through email.
Well, that's why that's where it's handier just to, if you can do it, like we were talking, going back a little bit further, is that if you can, on your, say, your web page, have the files there for folks to download.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
But that requires a certain additional amount of expertise that many people don't have.
Yeah.
One of the things that we've instituted at RIT is something, I think they call it Filer or Filebox. I don't remember. I don't use it. But there are things you can't send around our network because of viruses, but you can put them on the Filer,
right.
Mm-hmm. And they're checked for viruses there so that somebody else could download them. And you get to, you know, I guess they're, you know, who has the rights or whatever.
But, okay.
That's something that a lot of places are doing now. And then there are companies that are offering that kind of service. And again, depending on the size of it, you can put something like that up on Google Docs and then share that with somebody else who could then download it. But
yeah,
then again, you have to worry about whether or not it's proprietary and who'd be able to see it and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. I was mentioning last night in Second Life that one of my customers got around that problem by using Flickr. So they upload giant pictures to Flickr, and then the people that need it can download them from Flickr. But then anyone could see them, so that becomes an issue.
Right. Yeah. Well, yes, right. And in Google Docs, who you share it with is private. You know, I've got a bunch of docs up there that no one else can see until I share them with somebody. And then that person can see them, but nobody else. But
that
even
was,
so, who else is there? I mean, do you know, it comes back down to who do you trust.
That was something I just read this morning. A woman was on disability for depression, and her insurance company has revoked her claim and stopped making payments because they found her Facebook page that showed her at a party and on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said back, well, my doctor who's treating me for depression said go out and try to have fun.
Right.
To try to see if that helps the depression. And two, how did they get to my Facebook page without me friending them?
Oh, that's easy. No, for those of you who are on Facebook and think it's private,
I got some swampland for them.
Yeah, private doesn't mean private. Private means you can't see it until somebody better than you goes looking for it. The reality is that nothing on Facebook is private.
Going back there for one second, speaking of Second Life, one, we should tell folks about it, but I also wanted to wish a very good friend of ours that does come to Second Life a lot is Dory.
Mm-hmm.
She is now in the hospital recovering. She had some surgery, went through it fantastic.
She's excellent.
On a road to recovery, but it's going to mean a lot better way of life and eating and everything else for
her.
The folks who know.
Where
so I just wish her the well.
The road to recovery.
But everybody should, if they want to try something different, really come and check us out in Second Life, where we do sound bites just like we're doing here. We also do it there every Friday night at 6 o'clock Linden time.
That's 9 o'clock Eastern time.
Eastern Standard Time. And we literally get folks from all over the world and, like I say, answer computer questions. If we're lucky.
Yeah, right.
Seems like we get on to more other topics.
We talked about everything last night. Holy cow.
Quite the gauntlet of topics.
Yeah, we did. We talked all around everything last night. It was a lot of fun, actually. It was a lot of fun.
And, you know,
of the things we talked about was the AT&T commercial that we started to talk about earlier, the one with Luke Wilson. Really? That's a horribly bad commercial. We talked to that. Oh, I don't know. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, my golly. It's AT&T's, you know, the there's a map for that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
The Verizon commercial. This is AT&T's response to that. It's Luke Wilson with a board that he puts check marks on. And, you know, who's got the fastest 3G network, who's got the best coverage of all the networks, who does this, who does that. At the end, it says, on who's got the company that name starts with a V. Oh. They got one, you know, but it's just a really bad. It's not a well done commercial. It really doesn't. The there's a map for that grabs you, and it whether you like AT&T or you like Verizon or whatever. The fact is there's a map for that grabs you, and The don't make me look. Cheese and crackers. I need bleach. I bleach now.
Things that can't be unseen.
Exactly. Dave Enright doing the happy dance. But
I like the one though with the elves in that. They're putting things, you know, on a conveyor belt.
Right. But all of those commercials are the same way. They're good. The dad coming home, he can't get a signal. He gets in the house and he sees the box and the map pops up for Verizon and he's happy again. All those commercials are grabbers. They get your attention. They make you watch.
Yeah.
The Luke Wilson commercials, like.
Well, they're grasping.
It's just a terribly bad commercial. I'm not talking about which product is better. I don't do religious issues, but I will say that the ad is junk. The ad itself is junk.
Well, the thing is, the other ads, they make you laugh.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, like on the Elf one there, she's going, boy, they must have been really bad. They're not going to get any worse.
Yeah, right.
Just the comments in that, you
right,
know what
right.
I mean?
One of the people in the IRC chat has said, hey, Nick, could you elaborate about Facebook not being private? Have three girls who live on it. The reality is this, SB290773. It is... There's a setting in Facebook that lets you say this is private and you can't see it. And for the average human being, that works. But it's really, really easy to get around. And corporations can get around it really easily. I don't know of a major corporation that doesn't have somebody on their payroll whose job it is to get in and look at your stuff on Facebook. They can get around those blocks awfully easily and see all those private pictures. So if you're on Facebook and you ever expect to get a job somewhere doing something, you know, even minimally professional.
There was a great Joy of Tech the other day.
We don't have time, we got to go. But you want to be very careful what you put on. Going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you at Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Everyone desires a bright white smile. But when brushing twice daily isn't enough, you do have another option. In-office tooth whitening. In-office tooth whitening is a safe way to give your smile that extra sparkle. With an in-office tooth whitening procedure, your dentist protects your gums with a gel or rubber shield made specifically to fit your mouth. Then a whitening agent is applied to the teeth. You can also choose an at-home tooth whitening product. It's a good idea to see your dentist first to take care of any dental problems before you proceed. Tooth whitening may not work on enamel with certain types of stains or on bonded or filled teeth. To learn more about getting a brilliant smile, speak with your dentist to determine which tooth whitening option is right for you. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez-Howell. For more information, visit our website at ada.org.
When you like the music you hear on Jazz 90.1, you want it to continue to be there for you the next time you tune in. And that's exactly what happens when listeners become members of Jazz 90.1. Membership ensures that Jazz 90.1 can continue to bring you the jazz you love. You might even call membership a kind of music insurance. So if you enjoy the music on Jazz 90.1, make it a policy to become a member or renew your membership by calling 966-5299.
Hi, Mom. I'm heading out with the kids for seasonal flu vaccines.
But you're so healthy.
That might not protect us. We know someone whose healthy nephew died last year from the flu.
That's awful. I get my vaccine every year. It makes sense for all of you, too.
Seasonal influenza is a serious and sometimes deadly disease. Health officials recommend vaccination for all children 6 months through 18 years. Get fluent. Learn the flu facts. Visit PreventChildhoodInfluenza.org.
Here's a tip to the wise for all you tech-savvy scenesters.
One click will take you directly from the Jazz 90.1 website straight to the station's very popular Facebook and MySpace pages. Once there, you'll be privy to special announcements, exclusive contests, Jazz Insider info, everything to keep you hip to all the hip happenings at Jazz 90.1. So click on over to jazz901.org and help take jazz even further.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. All right, before we get to the next news, we have somebody on the line. We have Ron. Ron, where are you calling from?
Greece, New York.
And how are things in Greece, New York?
Oh, they're lovely.
I'm in Greece, New York. What can we do for you?
I have an Acer Esprit 3680 laptop.
Yep.
And the Acer screen comes up, and then after that, I get all these errors. Media test failure. Check cable, exiting PXE ROM, and then it says operating system not found.
Yeah, that's not good.
I know. Is that the hard drive?
Could be.
It could be the hard drive. In fact, that sounds like it, because It sounds like the machine itself is working, and it's just not connecting you up to the hard drive. The good news is that every laptop lets you get at the hard drive.
Okay.
Right, including netbooks and everything else. So while almost nothing else is really going to be fixable in a laptop, you might be able to pop the little access panel off the back and at least see if the hard drive has shaken loose. Right?
Okay.
I mean, make sure the machine is off when you do this.
Right.
But then you can push the hard drive back and see if it makes a better connection.
I say in laptops,
it's unlikely, but at least
rare.
You can try that.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, if that's the case, make yourself a little cardboard shim and stick it in there, and you're on your way. But beyond that, it's probably is it out of warranty? Of course it is.
Yes.
Of course it is. You're going to have to take it to somebody.
Okay.
But at least try that first.
Okay. But if I bought a new hard drive, where would I get the? They put the operating systems on when I bought the computer. Would I have to buy a whole new operating system? Or?
Well, it depends on how bad the hard drive is. I mean, if the hard drive is just so that the FAT table is messed up, you know, it might be able to be... It depends on what you're going to need it checked out.
Sometimes it can be repaired. Sometimes it needs to be replaced.
The problem
and if
is
you
that
don't have disks, then you've got a real problem.
Right. And the problem for me is that media test cable fail check thing. That, to me, says there's something more wrong than just the FAT table and the hard drive. But try that first, and then beyond that, really seriously, maybe you get spin right and see if you can find the drive. But honestly, it sounds to me more like there's a real problem with the actual hardware somewhere.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. Sorry. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. You know, that's the kind of thing that...
I always hate calling customers, yeah, I'm sorry your hard drive is dead and you don't have a backup, do you?
Right, right. And that's the other problem. We've been talking about that earlier.
Yep.
People don't have backups.
Spend $100 and buy a backup drive. Or you're going to spend hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars recovering that data.
This is what I love at our IT students. Are always coming to us saying, you know, there's a problem with this disk or there's a problem with my drive or whatever. Can you recover the data? Let me get this straight. You couldn't spend $30 on a thumb drive to back up your data, but I can spend 2 weeks of my life trying to recover your data? Yeah, I don't think so. It's just not going to happen. You're going to go to the bottom of my pile, and my pile is months and months long.
Especially
it's just not going to happen.
Flash drives are real easy for copying just your regular documents. But a lot of people will have pictures. In this digital age, you don't have negatives or slides anymore that you can recreate.
Right.
So that all your pictures, we get this a lot. You know, my 6 months of baby pictures for the first grandkid.
And you didn't think to back them up?
Yep.
Exactly.
Hello?
Yeah.
See it all the time.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Nick. Nick, where are you calling from?
Rochester.
And what can we do for you, Nick?
Two quick questions. First one, I bought a camcorder in 99, and basically what I want to do is play the videos back from the camcorder through my laptop, which has basic Home Vista. Basically want to play it back, maybe do some very simple editing, nothing fancy, eventually transfer to a DVD. Now, I know I don't have, since it was 99, I don't have the right connections to do that, but I heard there are some capture cables available or other things, for example, like Dazzle Video Creator.
Yeah, there's a bunch of companies that sell USB capture cards. The big trick is, does your camera have any sort of video out on it, or is it only the tape?
It's only the tape.
Then you're extra in trouble. You need to... Is it VHS or VHS-C?
VHS-C.
Then you need to find a VHS adapter so you can put it into your VHS tape player, which hopefully will have an out, a video out on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can use some of the USB capture cables. They're between $20 and $100, depending on how good a quality you want.
Mm-hmm. And you can find them on Amazon. You can find them pretty much everywhere.
Pretty much everywhere, yeah.
And then you can play that in your VCR, and then from there capture it to your, assuming you still have a VCR.
Yeah, and then the next step is editing software to actually edit those videos, and most mm-hmm. of the capture boxes come with editing software, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. One other quick question. My laptop came with an 80-gig hard drive, and it seemed recently, the last few weeks or so, it's been running a little bit slower than usual.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a look, and I see that I got about 5 point something, or close to 6 gigs remaining. And I was wondering, could that be the reason it's running slow?
Could be part of the reason.
Yeah, as the hard drives fill up, Windows runs and Mac, too, run out of swap space and everything gets slower.
So right. You could try, you know, moving some of the stuff off of that onto, you know, removable, whether mm-hmm. it's an external, say,
but let me suggest that the first thing you do is back up all the data on that hard drive.
In case the hard drive itself is failing.
Right. Mm-hmm. If the hard drive is failing, this is your warning. This is the shot across the bows. Don't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then back to the video camera for a second. If you get a new digital camcorder, most digital camcorders now have that analog pass-through. So that you plug your old camcorder or your VCR into your new camcorder, and then your new camcorder into your computer,
mm-hmm.
and that will let you capture it that way, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Okie doke.
That's what I needed. Thanks so much.
Have fun, Nick.
You too.
Yep.
All right. I have to read this news item. Here we go. Rumors that Apple will produce a $2,000 tablet next year fit the company's historical pattern of going for the luxury end of the technology market, according to analysts. According to reports from Asian component makers, Apple will push back the release of its long-rumored tablet into the second half of the year, in part because it plans to introduce a 9.7-inch model featuring an OLED, organic light-emitting diode, display, which is the hottest new thing. Component manufacturers in Taiwan and China said Apple will launch a pair of tablets in the latter half of 2010, one sporting a 10.6-inch TFT-based display, which is normal, and the second is a smaller OLED screen. Previously, talk about Apple and a tablet is centered around a ship date in the first half of next year, perhaps as early as February 2010. Apple would probably use an iPhone-esque two-stage launch that pre-announced the hardware, a strategy that would give developers time to create applications or tweak existing iPhone software, said analysts. The retail price most often bandied about was somewhere between the $2,000 of the iPhone and iPod Touch and the $1,000 of Apple's low-priced MacBook with an in-between price of about $800 favored. The analysts in general are all saying, you know, nobody knows how valid these reports are, but both the delay and the high-priced model makes a certain amount of sense given Apple's history. So we'll see, but it doesn't look like at least it'll happen much before the end of next year. And the smart money's betting that the tablet will be bundled, might be cheaper because it'll be bundled with long-term data plans as they currently do with the iPhone. So our question to you is, would you hold out for an Apple tablet that required a 2-year cell phone commitment separate from your oh-so-precious iPhone? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or 1-800 1-800-790-0415, just like Keith did. Keith, where are you calling from?
I believe I'm someplace out in Bloomfield.
Okay. Did you just suddenly wake up and find yourself transported to a mystic land?
No, I'm out here somewhere between Bloomfield, Canada, with Farmington.
Is it east or west? That's the
big
question. You don't want to be in East Bloomfield.
Not if you're from West Bloomfield, and yeah. Vice versa.
Yeah.
All right, what can we do for you, Keith?
A couple questions. I had a PC and a laptop PC hooked up to an in-house network. The laptop was giving me aggravation. And the only way I could copy the data files from the PC was, the only way I could copy the important data files off the laptop was via the PC through the network. That part seemed to work, okay? I moved them all copied them to a thumb drive.
Right.
The issue with the laptop, and now the files on the thumb drive, I can't open them. They won't open.
What happens when you try?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Do you get an error message?
Do you see any of them on the thumb drive?
I see the icon for them, and I try to go to properties, and it shows me nothing.
When you double-click on one, what happens? Do you get any sort of error message, anything?
Nothing. It's like they're not there. But when I go to my computer, it shows me that there is data on the thumb drive. Because it tells you how much is available, how much is used, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, you copied them from the laptop to the PC.
Right, and put them on a thumb drive.
And then from the PC to the thumb drive.
Directly to the thumb drive.
Oh, you shared the thumb drive. You know what might well have happened? When you copy them, you get this dialog box that says copying the files and yada, yada, yada. Then that goes away, but for a thumb drive, you're not done yet. There's actually can be a very long amount of time to wait before the files actually get put on the thumb drive, because what happens is what Windows does is copy that stuff in the background and give you back your machine sooner. So if you pulled out that thumb drive without going in and saying eject it, then it is very possible.
Safely remove hardware.
Remove hardware. If you didn't do safely remove hardware, it is very possible that it was not finished copying those files and you only got the table of contents there.
Which is squat.
Which is not the file itself. So my suggestion is two things. First, my suggestion is copy them from the laptop to the PC directly so that they're on the PC. Open them there and make sure they work. Then copy them to the thumb drive. And then when you're done copying them, do safely remove hardware. And that will then tell you when it has finished copying the files and you can remove the drive.
Well, it won't work because the PC crapped out. The laptop crapped out So I lost the data, but...
Well, not necessarily. You can pull the hard drive out of the laptop and still access the data.
Yeah.
No, I had to reformat it. Everything got screwed up.
Yeah.
I got two questions. So as I'm yelling and screaming at this laptop because it wasn't working right, I figured, okay, I'm going to try to make the switch to iMac or MacBook.
Sure.
So I'm thinking about either buying new wheels and tires for my sports car or buying an iMac for myself. What's the learning curve going to Mac? The last Apple product I owned that was a computer was a Apple IIc.
We like to say it is a lot like getting a new car. Because all the buttons and controls are in a different place. And in fact, in many cases, it's the opposite they are under Windows. When Windows copied the Macintosh, they moved all the buttons to the other side of the screen. So on the Macintosh, your My Computer's on the right, and on Windows, it's on the left, and your open and close buttons are on the left, and on Windows, they're on the right. So things are just sort of opposite as they are, between Windows and Mac. What we find is it takes people a week or so to get used to moving to the other place But once you get used to it, it starts coming second nature, just like it did when you learned Windows in the first place.
And like we've always said, it is like buying a new car. The basic idea is for about the first week, you fumble around on the dashboard because you don't know where the radio is, you don't know where the heater is. And after a couple of weeks, you forget you didn't know.
The one thing I do like when I go into the Apple store, I don't know if I can say that, they actually have intelligent human beings. It can ask you, actually ask, answer questions that you have, whereas if you go to, like, the big box stores, there's nobody ever there to help you.
Right, right.
And that's where we try to differentiate ourselves at Jesse Group, where, you know, we develop relationships with our customers. We don't just sell you a box and push you out the door.
Same
just like Dave when
yeah.
he sells his PCs.
Right. Yep. We always encourage people to buy locally. Because generally speaking, with somebody like Dave or like Steve, you do get a local, knowledgeable, intelligent person who can sell you a computer. Now, Dave mostly sells PCs. Steve mostly sells Macs, but he also sells PCs. But basically, you know, you want to go somewhere where you're comfortable with the salespeople. And more importantly, you're comfortable with the repair people. Because heaven knows you're going to see a whole lot more of them than of anybody else.
All right. Thanks for your time, guys.
Sure.
And then back to the tablet for a second. You can buy a Mac tablet now, the Axiotron ModBook, and it's only about $1,600 because they start with a regular $1,000 Mac and rip it apart and build a tablet out of it.
Nice.
So they can take your existing Mac and turn it into a tablet for about $650, or you can buy a custom-built tablet. So if you really want a Macintosh tablet, they are available. And they have some features that Apple doesn't include in the computer to begin with. They have a GPS built into it so that it knows where it is. And just like the iPhone and iPod Touch, it's got that location features available to it.
Right, right. It's an interesting point we're in right now. We have so many different devices that are either available right now or coming on the market that you can purchase. I don't know anybody who's going to have enough money for all of those things, and that's what we really want. But, you know, whether you're looking for that iPhone, that iTouch, that Droid, that HTC Hero, that new MacBook, that new netbook, that new whatever, it's an awfully exciting time, and I think that Christmas is going to be very exciting for everybody this year, but next year is going to be even better as we see more things come out. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back, and it's not a commercial break, it's just a break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is Station Manager Rob Linton thanking you for becoming a member or renewing your membership to Jazz 90.1. Because of you, we'll continue to broadcast great jazz music you've come to expect, as well as continuing our online streaming, live studio concerts, and special programs you can't hear anywhere else. If you've not yet made that pledge of support to Jazz 90.1, you still have time. You can pledge securely online at jazz901.org or by calling 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. You can browse and select from the great thank you gifts we're offering at the various donation levels like CDs and DVDs and great Jazz 90.1 clothing items online. Thank you for supporting your jazz station. Member supported, Jazz 90.1.
See what I mean?
You're right. I'm really not the worst trumpet player in the world. Thanks, Dad.
Just keep practicing, son. You'll get it.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 21 minutes after the hour, we... our sound bites. Our next caller. is Mark. Welcome, Mark. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from wonderful Albion, New York.
Albion, New York. And how are things down in lovely Albion?
Oh, fantastic. After all, this is the center of the universe.
That's exactly the center of the known universe.
Yeah.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. What can we do to make you happy, Mark?
Well, I've been having a problem with firewall, zone alarm to be specific. I'm running Windows XP Home Edition, and I had run into a problem a few weeks back where I could not get out anywhere on the Internet, and it wound up being something squirrely with zone alarm. When I turned that off and turned on the Windows firewall, I was able to do everything, and so I figured maybe something wrong with zone alarm. So using the Revo uninstaller, I uninstalled it, figured I would download a fresh version. And when I did, downloaded it and went to run it, it comes back telling me that I'm not authorized to make the changes necessary and need to log in as an administrator. And I am logged in as the owner. And I was wondering if you had encountered any problems like this.
Sometimes you let them. There's a subtle difference between the owner and the administrator. There are administrator users, and then there's the administrator user. And sometimes you need to use the run as administrator command. When you right click on an application icon, there's a run as administrator option. And that may work.
I'm sorry, I was
working on the next call.
Yeah, no.
So is it the Revo uninstaller itself that isn't working?
No.
No, it's Zone Alarm. He's trying to reinstall Zone Alarm, and it says he's not authorized. He has to be the administrator.
You used Revo to uninstall it?
Yes, when I
and then you restarted the machine.
Yes, and with the Revo, I kept it on the center default setting. Not the one that dug as deep as possible.
Okay, yep, the one from second from the bottom.
Yes, mm-hmm. And after...
You had to delete all the items?
Yes, I deleted everything, and then I went back in the computer, and there were still some zone alarm software downloads from old days, so it apparently didn't... catch those. And
well,
so
it's not going to take stuff out of the download directory.
Right,
that's not been installed. It's just an inert file on your machine.
Yeah, so I actually got rid of that.
Right.
And then I downloaded the Zone Alarm software into the software downloads and went to run it, and it starts to initialize and then comes back with a message from Zone Alarm telling me that I don't have the authorization to do that, and I have to log back in.
Now, you've run Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware?
Yeah, there may be something else in the system that's causing
something else
trouble.
Is in there grabbing it, yeah. Now, like I say, you've run those other two programs?
Yes, I ran the Super Anti-Spyware and the Malwarebytes, it didn't... Well, trying to think. It didn't come back with much of anything. But I then thought maybe something was wrong with the program that I had downloaded. So I dumped that again out of the software downloads. And a couple nights ago, re-downloaded Zone Alarm, and mm-hmm. It came up with the same thing.
All right. One other program that you can try that is equally as good, because there's something mucked up there in the registry, is Komodo. Komodo is another firewall program. If you go to majorgeeks.com.
It's K-O-M-O-D-O.
Yep. And, no, this is C.
Really?
Yeah, C. And look for that.
You're thinking of the dragon.
Yeah.
And I'm also thinking of the editor.
And you can download that firewall program. Sometimes I've had some issues when something gets mucked up in the registry, and to try to sort through it would take you a month of Sundays to even try to figure out to commence the menu to even get near it. So try Komodo.
They have a free version and a pay version as well.
Mm-hmm. One other thing is, are you running AVG?
Yes, I am.
Nine? It doesn't matter. Try turning off AVG, because AVG is known to disrupt Facebook. It is known to disrupt Zone Alarm.
Yeah, there's a conflict between the latest AVG and the latest Zone Alarm.
So that could be just as I'm trying to run the program, AVG could be causing that problem?
Could be blocking it, yeah. Thinking
right.
That it's trying to protect itself.
Who was the earlier caller that couldn't download, or the download that would download and then not install? That might have been the same problem there.
Yeah.
One of the earlier callers was having trouble installing something.
Okay, I can try that. One thing that when I turned the computer on this morning, it actually came up with the Windows security screen telling me that Zone Alarm was reporting that the firewall was turned off. And I had at the time, the last I was offline, went to install the program, the current Zone Alarm, when it wouldn't install, I just shut things down. And I had also disabled, when I was trying to load the program, I disabled the Windows firewall. And with that off, the Windows security comes back telling me that Zone Alarm's reporting that the firewall is turned off, but yet it's actually the Windows firewall that's turned off. If I go to turn on, if I turn on the Windows firewall, then the Zone Alarm message disappears.
What you can do, though, is in the when you click on the security settings in Windows XP, if you go in the control panel under the security settings,
yes.
Over on the left-hand side, there is a, I think it's the second item up from the bottom. Click on that, and it has whether to warn you about the firewall, the antivirus, and three things there.
Well, but
you can click the firewall.
Yeah, that gets rid of the message, but that solves the symptom, not the problem. I think what you've got is when you used Revo, you uninstalled everything, but there's some stuff left in the registry. If you want to reinstall Zone Alarm, turn off AVG. That'll reinstall Zone Alarm, fix everything in the registry, theoretically, and all of those problems should go away.
Well, fantastic. I'll give it a try.
Yep.
Let us know.
Okay, I certainly will.
Right. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much.
And have fun in lovely, bucolic Albion, New York.
Yeah, cool. We're getting out there. Oh, we should mention, we were talking before during the break there, about different backup programs, because we've been talking about backup. I mean, I know of one that's called Cobain, and that's a nice one that you can sit there and schedule to do various backups, select certain folders, so it can do it automatically for you.
And most hard drives you would buy as a backup drive come with backup software built in. Seagate has their free agent. There's Intego backup. Most of the drives will come with one, too.
And, I mean, right now, like, if you, say, get a couple 8-gig flash drives, you know, that are they're cheap, and just have those, one, you know, say 3 or 4 of them, and each night you're just rotating between them, backing up, say, different folders. One night it could do all your financial. Another night it could do all the pictures. And then another night, just do all your documents and spreadsheets. I mean, those are usually the three biggies when folks, you know, it comes to music. Yeah, you can, some folks, oh, my music is important. I realize that. But music, you can always get back. It's the pictures. You know, they could be old family photos. You know, things that you're not going to get back once they're gone. Or, you know, letters and other spreadsheets that you've spent countless hours. And we've said this time and time again. It's how important it is to you. Is it worth backing up?
If you lost everything on your computer right now, what would happen? What would you feel? What would you have anything that you wanted back?
Yeah.
Right. And that right now could be any time. So you want to be careful. For those of you who are in small businesses.
Oh, well, just to go a little bit further on your point. Is because, yeah, right now is a current time because what? We're moving indoors. The heat is coming on. Mm-hmm. You're walking around in bare feet and static electricity.
Yep, you want to be very careful. I have always advocated take the rug out of your computer room and compute naked. And that's really the only way you're going to be safe, really. But in the meantime, if you have a small business or, you know, a large number of machines, you might want to also take a look at a product called Bacula, B-A-C-U-L-A. It is free. It is an open source program, and it's essentially the open source enterprise ready network based backup program. It's called Bacula, and it's a pretty good one. So if you're a larger organization, that might be the one for you. We're gonna go back to the phones.
Let's say that also for personal use, there's several offsite personal backup programs. There's Carbonite and Mosey, and most of those are like less than $5 a month. Dropbox gives you 2 gigabytes for free.
Mm-hmm.
So having an off-site backup is also a good idea, too.
Right. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Our friend Dar in the northern wilds of Toronto, Canada. Welcome, Dar.
How are you doing, gentlemen?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay.
How are things in the frozen north?
Same as in the lovely Burb of Rochester.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
We're pretty close to Canada there,
Yeah,
Nick.
We really are.
You don't want to upset them.
No.
They know where you live.
And it's all downhill for them. So they, yeah, exactly. Yeah. What can we do for you today, Dar?
Sir, all this Microsoft agony and tribulations. There's an article in Tech Republic entitled "The Linux Consultant: The Maytag Repairman of the IT World." You might want to have a look at that.
Yeah, I love Tech Republic. Does a nice job. I'm just typing that in here. And you're absolutely right, Dar. One of the things that we've been talking about lately is I was reading this very long, convoluted article about viruses and problems and things. And I really stopped and thought, you know, they call them online viruses. They call them email viruses. They call them this and that and the other thing. The reality is they're Windows viruses.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody goes to great lengths to not call them Windows viruses. But that's what they are. They're not Mac viruses. They're not PC viruses. They're not operating system viruses. They're not email viruses. You get them through email, but they don't affect your email. They affect your Windows system. They're Windows viruses. It's time for us to start calling them what they are, Windows viruses. You're absolutely right. I have two guys who work for me. One is my Linux, essentially. I mean, they do a lot of other stuff, but one is my Linux guy, one is my Windows guy. My poor Windows guy runs around constantly. My Linux guy is able to keep up with his work fairly well, the system administration part of his job.
There have been a lot of studies showing support needs, and that's typically one Windows support person for every, 10 PCs. But for Mac and Unix, it's one support person for every 50 to 100 Mac or Unix PCs.
Yep, it's absolutely true. You can save a lot of money in two ways. One is it costs you a whole lot in the Linux world. Macs cost an initial larger amount of money because they're proprietary and more expensive, but in the long run, you get to save that. But you can save an awful lot of money on the Linux side because the operating system is absolutely free, and you need many fewer support people to do the work. And it depends on what your company does. Obviously, if what you do is Photoshop all day long and you really need Photoshop to do your job, then you're probably on Macs anyway, but you're not going to use Linux. But if what you do is word processing and email and spreadsheets and yada, 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 it doesn't matter what operating system you use. Why are you spending hundreds of dollars for the operating systems, hundreds more for the Office suite, hundreds mm-hmm. of thousands more for your tech support people when the operating system and the Office suite could be free and you need fewer tech people? I've never understood it.
One interesting rebuttal we heard is the prestige of having underlings. If I have a big window shop, I need a lot of tech people reporting to me, which makes me feel better because I have more prestige.
Okay, you're not important for what you know or can do. You're just important for the number of people you work.
How many people
size
report
matters.
To me. Yeah.
Okay, I get it. All right.
That will never be a pitch that I can put to my wife.
But we know a lot of Windows support people inside of corporations that go home to their Mac because they want it to just work.
Yep. Yep, or to their Linux box. Yep. I run a Linux box, and nobody. You're absolutely right, Dar. The reality is that the other thing is, you know, all of us absolutely love Windows. And we love it because we're not going to be out of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It just ain't going to happen. As long as there are Windows machines, they will need us to fix them.
While you're at it, you're talking about all the different Photoshop and all that programs. Daily Cup of Tech has, for posterity, he says, given a translation of the EULA Microsoft agreement in plain English.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, actually. It's actually pretty cool.
It's scary.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It takes every line and breaks it down. You know, in some cases, it just says, "Yeah, all right, this means what it says." But for most of it, when he translates it, it's a little scary. You're right.
It comes to the bottom. The bottom line is Microsoft is not liable, even if they break the terms of this agreement.
Right.
Yeah. If anything goes wrong, it's not Microsoft's fault. Anything. Period.
Right. Anything that happens accidentally or that they do.
The first Google search for Microsoft EULA in plain English is from a website I found called Military Platypus.
Nice.
What in the world is Military Platypus?
You're absolutely right, Dar.
All right, but to back off for one moment, because, again, I make my living off of this, but in the same token, where we've come from, when we started out with Windows 386 to where we are now, the amount of devices that now work under Windows compared to, I mean.
And we want our computers to do so much more.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, to make it all balance and try to get everything right, that is one remarkable feat.
They've done a great job. So have the Linux people and so have the Mac people. But and it's kind of a fallacy nowadays that you can't find drivers for Linux stuff, but the reality is that all the operating systems are excellent, but in general, you know, an operating system that's been around as long as the Unix operating system is a lot easier to handle and deal with than some of these young upstarts, young whippersnappers who should get off my lawn.
Yeah, and like,
but then on the other side of that, the young OSs can solve the problems the old OSs have had and try to make themselves leaner and better.
Well, so it's that catch 22, is that the older operating systems just fix the stuff.
Yep. Yeah, Linux has been around for 40, 50 years, so they've got everything fixed by now.
Yeah, yeah. All right, thanks, Dar. Oh, is Dar gone? Okay, we're done with it, but she's absolutely right. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with Windows. It's, you know, I'm not saying it's horrible, it's bad. You should But I'm just saying that in terms
challenges.
Of a company, in terms of challenges, there are, generally speaking, fewer on a daily, regular basis under Linux or the Mac. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show. Sound bites, celebrating 20 years.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Sound Bites.
Driving less? Vacationing close to home? These are things a lot of us do to use less gas. Some people are doing even more. They're working with local planners to create communities where jobs, schools, and public transportation are walkably close. Places where leaving the car at home is part of the plan. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, it's time for Sound Bites. All right, kiddies. It's that time once again. Get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I'm still getting excited.
I know, you're up in the 90s there for a bit.
We've been doing good there, holding in. But anyways, let's get back to good old Windows 7. No, I'm for all in all, I'm really liking the OS. You know, I mean, it. You know, knock on wood. Yeah. It's pretty stable. It's, you know, holding its own as far as, you know, it hasn't been giving me a lot of issues crashing or anything else. But for you folks that have Vista and have Windows XP and want to go to it, it's going to take some time to do it. It's not like the other OSs, especially going from Windows XP. Because I go, folks, you know, they want me to do it for them, and I, you know, tell them what it's going to cost them. Well, just put it over it. Do you want your data backed up? Well, yeah. Well, with Windows XP, you got to back up your data.
You're looking at a couple, 3 hours minimum.
Minimum. And that's also on top of, because I love this. Do you have the drive? You got all the, we got to go and get all the drivers. Well, shouldn't that be in Windows? Nope.
Well, it should be, but it
isn't. Yes, it should be. Yes, it should be. Sure. Yes, we all agree it should be, but it's not.
So, you know, I mean, like Steve said, this is going to take time. Yep. And, you know, don't bitch at me if you don't want to, you know, take the time yourself. And I'm telling you, here's what it's going to cost to do it, because it is labor intensive. There is just no way around it. The only solution, and I got one person got real porky, stay with XP.
Right.
You know, why are you going to Vista, going to Windows 7? Well, it's the latest. Yeah. And what are you doing with it? Well, I do word processing and email, and I surf the web a little bit. My question to you again, why are you going to Windows 7?
Mm-hmm.
We had a customer this week.
They can't answer you.
Yeah, we had a customer this week bringing his computer. He bought Windows 7, tried to install it himself, and got really scared when he saw the instructions.
Right.
And brought it to us to do.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know.
And then we got really scared when we saw the instructions.
No, I mean, it's going to take some time in there. But unless you have some huge, compelling reason to switch, don't.
Wait for a new computer.
Yes. Oh, I had another one. You ready?
Yeah, here we go.
Pentium 3. Yeah, running Windows 98.
256 megs?
128
megs,
yeah,
of RAM.
Nice.
Yeah. And got upset with me because they went out and bought, they were told they could put Windows 7 on it. I go, huh?
Well, you could balance the CD on top of the of the case. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, you can.
And it's like,
if you
no.
upgrade, if you upgrade the RAM, upgrade the processor, upgrade the hard drive, yeah, you could.
Upgrade the memory.
Upgrade the memory, yeah.
Upgrade the motherboard.
Yeah, I think that's called, oh, a new computer!
Exactly.
So, yes, you know, folks, you got to take the time. You know, if there's nothing wrong with your current machine, stay with it. I know Microsoft is putting up, oh, well, they're going to end support. Yeah, in another 6 or 7 years, there's still a huge audience out there. And Microsoft, through big corporations, are going to be, you know, sticking to that for a while.
Right.
Because places like, I'm sure you at RIT, you're now all of a sudden getting rid of every computer to replace it with Windows 7, nor did you with Vista.
We've got a couple of programs that our faculty require for their research that don't run under Windows 7. We can't move to it until they do. That's simple enough. Yeah. We just can't do it.
But, you know, all these folks just think...
And it's the same thing on the Mac side. With the new Snow Leopard is out, the first big hurdle people are running into is it's Intel only. So if your computer is more than 4 years old, it won't work, period.
All right, kiddies, that's it. It's time to put Uncle Dave back on the shelf. Put your mug of your empty hot cocoa mug in the sink. Get out of your footy jammies. We're going to give him his little shot and put him up on the shelf. Thanks, Uncle Dave. Bye-bye. Sweet dreams. But it's true. We've got people who can't wait to move to Windows 7. I'm not entirely certain why.
Just wait till Windows 8.
Yeah. Well, we'll start hearing that from Microsoft every day now. Exactly right. Yeah. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel. Where are you calling from, Joel?
From Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh. What can we do for you?
I have a minor annoyance. I've got a PC that's running Windows 7. And the attached monitor is attached to a dual DVI, I think 7600 GS video card. The minor annoyance is that unless the monitor is on when I turn the computer on, it doesn't recognize the monitor. If the computer goes to sleep and I bring it back up, It doesn't recognize the monitor. Any ideas?
Well, power off is sort of normal, but sleep it should redetect. Because there's something that used to be a problem is to run a headless computer. You just want the computer running, serving files. You don't want it to have a monitor.
See, I turn most of that junk off.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
As far as the hibernation.
There's a detect on wake
that
must be turned off somewhere.
Well, and in addition, what is your computer a desktop?
It's a desktop, yes.
Many of them, the BIOS is not really designed to accept sleep mode.
Okay, well, I've turned off sleep, so that resolves half the problem.
Right, because...
But the monitor's not... If the monitor's not on when the computer's turned on, it doesn't see it.
A lot of times what you can do is, when you turn the monitor on, unplug it from the computer, wait a second, plug it back in, and the computer will do a detect. Oh, here's a monitor, and I'll use it.
Yeah, but that's
now.
A pain in the neck, too.
Yeah.
I hate to ask the obvious question. You've got a dual DVI card. Have you tried plugging into the other DVI outlet?
Yes, I have.
And the same problem
same
occurs.
Thing. Yep.
It's got to be something in the driver that you can turn on for auto detect, only I'm not familiar with that card, and so I can't tell you where to go look for it.
Like I say, I would first double check. The simplest one is go into your control panel under power options. Make sure that those are all set to not do it.
Right. To not sleep.
Yeah, do not sleep. And then there's one tab there for hibernation, and turn off the hibernation.
Yeah, that's all set.
Okay. All right. Then, the thing I have to suggest, and I know you're going to hate to hear this, but look in the manual for the video card.
You mean he's got to break that plastic seal?
I know. It was so perfect. And
what?
Really, on eBay, it gets more money when it's still in
what
the
What manual from 5 years ago? Yeah.
Well, and that's the problem.
You may need to go online
and get it.
Maybe
but
a driver update, too.
You may need a driver update, particularly for Windows 7. You may just simply, if it's a five-year-old card, there simply may not be a driver specifically for that card for Windows 7.
It had the same behavior under XP and Vista, too. So.
Do you know what frequency you're running it at?
I think it's 75.
Try 60 hertz. Sometimes
the
lower frequencies work better. They don't look as good, but they work better.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but at least you'd be able to tell then. You'd know one way or the other. But, yeah, without looking in that manual, and again, if it's that old, I don't hold out a lot of hope that there's a Windows 7 specific driver for that machine.
Okay, good enough. Thanks a lot, guys.
Sorry. That's one of the problems, of course, with Windows 7, with any new operating system.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, they often leave behind... some of the older hardware or some of the lesser known hardware. You know, they have to put their money in the most common stuff in order to get it out to market in a reasonable amount of time.
And that's where it falls back onto the other manufacturer of that particular equipment. If they're actually going to do a driver that will be compatible with Windows 7.
Right, but often if they've discontinued that model... Or they don't have a lot of people on their payroll, it either waits or it never gets done. And that's one of the things with moving to a new operating system. You really have a question as to whether all your old hardware is going to work.
We've seen this issue with people connecting laptops to televisions.
Yep.
Because televisions have their own set of display resolutions separate from computers that the computer doesn't always recognize the TV as a monitor. If it's not turned on and it can't do an auto detect. So I suppose the other solution is just make sure you turn your monitor on first.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting thing. Oh, I have to do this one news item though.
Cool.
This is a great news item. In the latest example of how Google uses its technology to improve the user experience and its other web services, on Thursday, Google paired its automatic speech recognition technology with its YouTube caption system to offer automatic captioning of YouTube videos. Automatic captions use the same voice recognition algorithms that power automatic voicemail transcription in Google Voice, which works really well, to generate captions for video on the fly. This is a boon for deaf and hearing impaired users who want to enjoy the millions of videos on the YouTube video sharing service. After all, while Google introduced captions for Google Video and YouTube in 2006, some 20 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every minute. Think about that. 20 hours of video every minute. Video creators don't have the time to add captions to add more context to the video content they wish to share. Even with all the captioning support already available on YouTube, the majority of user-generated video content online is inaccessible to people like me, wrote Google software engineer Ken Herrenstein, who is deaf. Machine-made captions solve that time and resource dilemma. They're also not just helpful to the hearing impaired. They also enable users to jump to the exact spots in the video they're looking for and will help people who speak languages other than English accessing video content in the 51 languages that Google Translate service supports. Now, it's not perfect. You really need a video that has somewhat plain, clear text. You know, those videos where they video some kid jumping off a roof with his skateboard and then crashing and falling, and 80 kids all at once go, "Oh my God, radical dude!" That's really not going to get translated ever. But in general, you know, if you've got at least a modicum of intelligent speech, it will be done. So you can also create a text file with all the words in the video and upload it to YouTube, and Google will use its speech technology to configure when the words are spoken and create captions for the video and sync them up together. So it's pretty neat. Automatic captions are currently only visible on YouTube partner channels for UC Berkeley, Stanford, MIT, Yale, UCLA, Duke, UCTV, Columbia, PBS, National Geographic, Demand Media, UNSW, and most Google and YouTube channels. So it'll be happening pretty soon. Do you like the idea of automatic captions? Does it make sense to you? Give us a call. 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I always have to leave the captions on when I watch TV or movies because people don't shut up.
Oh, yeah. I do it more and more, in particular when I'm watching something that's from England.
Yep.
For some reason, and maybe it's my ears, maybe it's my television, but on most of those things, the sounds, the ambient noises are very loud, and the voices are very low. Or when you're watching a lot of TV shows now, there's eight characters who talk like this, and one character who talks like this, and I just never hear that person ever.
I was watching something on BBC America the other day, and they subtitled one guy and didn't subtitle the other guy.
Yeah,
because the one guy had a really thick Irish accent.
Yeah. And of course, most people on television nowadays don't speak English well anymore. Mm. I'm not saying they're not native speakers. They just mumble. Nobody teaches people to speak anymore.
Enunciate.
Exactly. And so consequently, instead of talking, they're talking like this, and sometimes we don't know what they're saying. And of course, we have to blame Marlon Brando for that. But still, I can't hear them. I can't tell what they're saying. So I either have to turn it up really, really loud, and then that annoys both me and everybody else in the house, or I turn on the captioning.
Yep.
But at least, you know, they have
captions. It's sometimes interesting to see when the captions are different from the dialogue.
Oh, that's my favorite.
They must do captions from the script, and the dialogue can change when they're actually shooting.
Right. When you are watching a full, particularly cheap Japanese or Chinese martial arts movies, you put on the English soundtrack and the captioning, and they're completely wildly different.
Yep.
All right, that's it for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. We appreciate that very, very much. I want to apologize to all of those to whom we did not get. Call in earlier and more often next week, but we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We are here on the longest running and greatest computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. Join us online at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. We are here every Saturday from noon to 2 on member-supported Jazz 90.1. So we will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. When was the last time you heard that?
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.